very much, thank you. And thanks to all of you for being here. I'm not, I have to admit, a specialist in dementia care at all. I'm a straightforward visual artist, if there is such a thing. But Vishaka Sarkar very kindly invited me to talk here based on quite a lot of collaboration that I've done with Vishaka over the years, where we've organised events such as dance and drawing workshops, where people have come together to do some dancing and some drawing, and sometimes the choreography was inspired by the drawings that people made, and vice versa. So from that kind of collaboration over a few years, she very kindly asked if I'd like to speak a few words at this conference, which seems to be going fantastically well so far. So anyway, I'll get started. In 1859, Florence Nightingale, the founder of modern nursing, wrote that beautiful objects and brilliancy of colour are actual means of recovery. And I think all modern practitioners of art therapy would agree with that and believe that recovery from a huge variety of ills, both physical and mental, can be aided and accelerated using the therapeutic powers of art. The therapeutic value of creativity of all types has probably been recognised for millennia, ever since the eras of cave paintings and hieroglyphics. In the UK, the NHS started employing art therapists in the 1940s after psychiatrists and psychoanalysts had noticed that drawings and paintings could make a valuable contribution to the therapeutic process. The British Association of Art Therapists define art therapy as a, this is a quotation, a form of psychotherapy that uses art media as its primary mode of communication. The patient or client need not be at all artistically talented or even artistically inclined, and the art produced doesn't have to be aesthetically pleasing or accomplished. Instead, the basic premise is that irrespective of an individual's talents or inclinations, the very act of making art involves every human being in a creative process, which is, by nature, healing and life-enhancing. Unlike in other forms of therapy, the relationship in art therapy is three ways: between patient and therapist, and image or artifact. And one thing I want to want to mention throughout this talk is the idea that thinking.
Can you still see, Jeff?
Yes, I can.
Thank you. Right, thank you, Vishaka, for your marvellous theatrical presentation.
It's all right.
I was just concerned
you might... be shining light enough.
No.
Are you happy?
No, it's absolutely fine, because I've got these printed in font, huge font.
18.
Anyway, but to get back to the point of... art therapy. I'm a strong believer, as a visual artist, that thinking is, as well as being verbal, it's non-verbal. And as an artist, it's through the manipulation of materials, whatever they might be. It could be paint, could be clay, could be a pair of scissors, you know, whatever. And it's through the engagement with materials that you can conceptualize and think and give some form to your experiences, so that making a visual form of art, you're involved in hand-eye coordination plus various motor skills in handling tactile material. Talking about the British Association of Art Therapists, who believe that art therapy is enhancing in two main ways. Unlike in other forms of therapy, the relationship in art therapy is three ways, between patient and therapist and image or artifact. In some settings, the therapy also involves looking at paintings and art appreciation rather than creation as a therapeutic tool. And here, this slide basically shows somebody engaged in using clay and getting, you know, being really, really involved in what they're doing. This particular painting, I just found it on Google Image. I don't actually know who it's by or who it's of, but I was drawn to it for including in this talk. It kind of makes you think of digital technologies in the way that the tonal areas have been simplified in a kind of uniform manner, in a mechanical way, and it kind of standardizes the image, which you see so much in the digital technologies. But at the same time, it is an image of an individual. So you've got the kind of dichotomy of those two things. Art therapists treat anyone and everyone. They can treat individuals, groups, for example, those under stress in the workplace or in relationships, the bereaved elderly, cancer patients, or indeed people with Alzheimer's and dementia. Anecdotal evidence from patients as well as art therapists show that it helps. In one example, a manic depressive patient attested to the feelings of release and hard-won inner peace gained from art therapy, and told of how before she started, she used to regularly cut herself. Having started art therapy, she began slashing at the canvas with blood-coloured paint instead, and found that this enabled her to express her rage and anger with all the intensity she needed without harming herself. So that's a very kind of clear example of how art therapy helps somebody. Abused children don't respond well to questions, may be far more informative and open up more if asked to draw how they're feeling. The fascinating idea of art as a diagnostic tool has also been raised. American researchers have compared the paintings of temporal lobe epileptics with those of non-epileptic seizure patients. They believe that the epileptics have a distinctive style with a lot of visual scribbling movements and a frame-filling motif. So maybe art could, as well as helping to heal, also serve as a marker for identification and treatment of epileptics. I'm not an expert in that area. I've just mentioned that as something that some of you may know much more about than I do, or something that you may want to go on to research yourself. There is a problematic issue of stereotyping when you're looking at types of art production. And some characteristics of worsening dementia have been commonly observed, e.g. blurring of images, but increasing fragmentation in creating images is also seen in many artists' work who don't have dementia. So one needs to be careful when looking at artwork about labelling it, or it's problematic as a means of diagnosis. Alzheimer's disease seems to have a curious relationship with artistic abilities and appreciation. For example, the well-known artist Willem de Kooning became frenetically productive during the period in which his Alzheimer's disease developed and worsened. Bizarrely, a rare form of Alzheimer's, known as frontotemporal dementia, may cause people who were previously not at all artistic to develop aptitude and talent. I'll talk more on de Kooning later on. This, I thought, beautiful quotation. Let me read it. It's a slide I got from the Museum of Modern Art in New York's program called Meet Me, the Meet Me program. The visual and performing arts provide a lot of opportunities for people with dementia to express themselves and to access long or short-term memories, and also enable an exploration of emotions, thoughts, dreams or hopes. And lots of museums and galleries, including MoMA in New York, are using the making of art and the appreciation of art as a way of making art accessible to people with dementia and helping in their treatment and helping the carers who look after the sufferers as well. Since its inception about 4 years ago, MoMA's Meet Me program for dementia and Alzheimer's patients has inspired a great many other museums as well. The program provides an opportunity for the patients, most of whom in this program were artists or frequenters of the museum previously, to view current exhibitions during off hours on carefully guided tours. While art therapy isn't a new concept, the program is unique in that it allows the patients to reconnect and discuss the work right before them, rather than attempting to recall memories. Lots of lively discussions of work by modern masters like Henri Matisse, Jackson Pollock and Andy Warhol are held involving dementia and Alzheimer's sufferers. And the individuals are encouraged to discuss the works and to express whatever thoughts and emotions come to mind. Seeing art and talking about it, like creating art, is thought to release trapped emotions and engage parts of the brain that keep the mind active and the memory intact. In fact, art may prove a vital creative outlet for many with a disease who can no longer read or have trouble speaking or understanding words. Art, like music and dance, seems to touch areas deep in the brain that are vital for well-being and emotional health, regardless of age or mental capacities. Harking back to what I said earlier about art being essentially non-verbal communication, the painter Paul Cézanne said, "All talk about art is useless." I probably haven't quoted him exactly, but he did say that, something very like it. Some artists are really into constructing verbal polemics. People like Paul Klee, for example, have written great kind of theses on the production of art and the methodologies of making art. Whereas other artists, myself included, tend to shy away from talking about their own work, much happier letting other people who are trained in doing these things do it for them.
5 more minutes. Whilst you talk about your work.
Right, okay. Anyway, getting back to MoMA, the programme I was talking about, the Meet Me programme, the museum's offerings for individuals with dementia and their caregivers include by request programmes for groups coming from care organisations, such as assisted living facilities, nursing homes and adult care centres. These programmes, which incorporate conversations and analyses of artworks, and may include art-making components, take place at the museum as well as at off-site places at different organisations. This is one of these sessions taking place. One of the museum staff talking about a painting, clearly a Picasso painting. Somebody who studied some of these issues is someone called Dr. Bruce Miller, who is a neurologist at the University of California, who's reported on a number of people suffering from a kind of dementia called frontotemporal dementia. Even as parts of their brains were slowly dying and ceasing to function, they developed entirely new artistic abilities. He found that the neurochemical serotonin was profoundly depleted, leading to some sufferers to crave chocolate, sweets, and overeat. Others developed a profound compulsion due to the lack of serotonin. This compulsion contributed to the art and music that they produced because they became obsessed with their art, doing it over and over again. He found that only a small percentage of the patients showed this blossoming of visual or musical capability. It seemed to be a group who degenerated primarily on the